Hello from me, Andrew West, here with the Religion and Ethics Report. The Anglican Archbishop of Sydney railed against the use of Frank Sinatra's signature hit, My Way. But he wasn't so much a music critic as a social analyst. And with the Middle East peace process effectively dead, an Orthodox Jewish scholar suggests an unorthodox way out of the impasse. Well, Peter Jensen has been the Anglican Archbishop of Sydney for almost 12 years. He's retiring in early 2013. This week he delivered his last address to the Synod of the Sydney Diocese. The headline coming out of that speech was his comment about the egoism that's reflected in the use of Frank Sinatra's famous anthem, My Way. It's apparently very popular at funerals. Of course, his comment ignited the letters page of the Sydney Morning Herald. But there is a deeper analysis here, and it goes beyond the question of ego to that great philosophical idea, that great philosophical contest between individualism and communitarianism. Now, interestingly, Dr. Jensen shares this critique of individualism with the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, who's also leaving his job soon. In a moment, we'll discuss the occasionally brittle relationship between Rowan Williams and those parts of the Anglican Communion that Dr. Jensen helps lead. But Dr. Jensen, with your comments on individualism, are you trying to nudge Australian politics in a more communitarian direction?
What I've tried to do in the political realm is not so much to take sides, of course, that's not my job, but to ask both left and right of politics, what's their fundamental ideology? If you trace it back, you'll find in many cases it's really Christian. Both left and right seem to have forgotten this in some ways, and I've tried to draw them back to the Christian roots.
10 years ago, when you became Archbishop, you also set a benchmark. You said that you wanted 10% of Sydneysiders in Bible-based churches. Now, did you succeed in that objective?
Yes and no. The 10% was intended to shake us out of our lethargy. It did. It has had a significant effect in our churches. To shake us from our lethargy, to get us to try new things, to experiment, to start new works. All those things have happened. I'll explain that. In terms of the 10%, it wasn't 10%, it was at least 10%. The story we're constantly being told, of course, is that we are declining. We're going into history. We're going down the plug hole. In our part of the world, in our church here, we're actually growing. We're not declining. And so although we haven't got to 10% of the population, in fact, frankly, we've only kept pace with the growth of Sydney, yet we are increasing our numbers. And we're doing an awful lot of new things.
Yet, although the census did show that the number of people identifying as Anglican had declined, now not a steep decline, but it was on the way down. And it was on the way down in both Sydney and Melbourne, which suggests that no matter what the style or tenor of the theology, that Anglicanism was waning a little.
No, I don't regard that as relevant. What has happened, I think, is that the number of people we are taking from England has declined, and therefore the number of people who identify as Anglicans in a nominal way has declined. There are still 725,000 Anglicans in the Diocese of Sydney, about 12% of whom go to our churches. That's pretty good compared to others. And furthermore, we are challenging ourselves now to reach out beyond people who are self-identify as Anglicans and to reach people of other ethnic groups. So our church has about 60 congregations of people who are not from an Anglo background. That's great news.
Also in 2001, about the same time that you became Archbishop of Sydney, Cardinal George Pell became the Catholic Archbishop of Sydney. Yeah. Now, at the time, the Sydney Anglican Diocese declined to send a representative to his installation as Archbishop. Now, given that you and Dr. Pell have become friends, you have spoken out on the same public platforms on social issues, is that something that would happen again?
Probably, and that's why we're friends. Dr. Pell, whom I greatly admire, of course, is a man of conviction. He recognises that Sydney Anglicans are people of conviction, and that's why we're able to respect each other and be such friends. He invited me, actually, to go to the cathedral, to his cathedral, when he was made a cardinal, and I attended for their evening prayer service, and then when the Mass began, I withdrew. That was by arrangement with him. He respects that. And It has never hindered our relationship, and I think we will continue in the same way. You see, when there are people of conviction who still speak the truth in love, the problems that other people see with this, I believe, don't exist. It actually is important that we stand for what we believe.
But the reason I ask this, Dr. Jensen, is because in the battle against atheism, against materialism, I'm wondering what allegiances you are prepared to make.
It has always been our practice in the Diocese of Sydney to work alongside others. In each issue, we need to ask ourselves who we can work together with or who may be co-belligerents. In many issues, particularly the ethical and moral issues, we have always worked and will continue to work with Roman Catholics, sometimes with Jewish folk and Muslims as well. We have to choose our issue so that we don't confuse people about the basic doctrinal stance we're taking. But on the other hand, we gather together with as many people of goodwill as we possibly can. I believe in that. I believe in community.
Let me finally talk about the Archbishop of Canterbury, who has announced his resignation. What sort of person should fill the role of Archbishop of Canterbury?
I believe it ought to be a person who's going to be an excellent Bishop of Canterbury, first of all. In other words, rather than thinking of this as a worldwide international role and you've got to get a person who can do that, it's far better to make sure they've got the right person that they need for their diocese and then for the province in England. Get that person right, and I believe they'll have the right man internationally as well. If you try it the other way around, I think that it'll fail in England and it will probably fail internationally.
Is your comment basically based on the view that you don't believe in the Archbishop of Canterbury as the titular leader of the Anglican Church? I'm not suggesting you don't respect the position or the occupant, but you basically don't invest it with a great deal of leadership importance, do you?
No.
And why is that?
Because we live in the real world. The Anglican Communion, like the British Empire, has passed through different evolutions. It's going through one now. The respect that the office of the Archbishop of Canterbury was held in has been diminished. It's not gone. You rightly point out that I respect it and the office holder, but it's interesting to see and to sit with people from the rest of the Anglican Communion and to recognise that the old flag-waving respect has now ebbed away. And it really means we've got to stand on our own feet. Not a bad idea.
Now, when Rowan Williams announced his resignation earlier this year, you said the Archbishop of Canterbury is universally admired for his intellectual stature and his personal warmth. In his time as Archbishop, the Anglican Communion has been subjected to unprecedented stresses. Now, with all due respect, Dr. Jensen, you're probably the cause of at least some of those stresses because you've led a movement within the Anglican Communion, first of all, the Global Anglican Futures Conference, and out of that, the so-called Fellowship of Confessing Anglicans, which really has, in a way, weakened some of those bonds.
Well, it depends what you mean by cause. I'm sitting here at home in Sydney, a long way from anywhere. I haven't caused anything. I have had to respond to what others have done. So I don't claim myself as the cause of something. But when others have taken the stance they have, and I see myself bound in duty to respond to that and to respond to it in the sort of way I have. The second thing I'd say is this. I think if I were Rowan Williams, I'd be very glad for the GAFCON FCA movement, which is what you're referring to, because what it's managed to do is salvage 100,000 Anglicans in North America who otherwise would have been completely lost to the Anglican Communion. And so I think it's done a great job. If I were the Archbishop, I would at least be privately fairly happy with the results and be looking forward perhaps to a day, maybe in 15 or 20 years, when the whole thing can be revisited and that which is broken may be able to be knitted up.
You wouldn't be happy if you were him, though, that a very substantial figure like yourself, the leader of a large group of Anglicans, not just in Sydney, but I mean you are the secretary of the Fellowship of Confessing Anglicans,
yes,
which is an international movement, you wouldn't be happy that you had declined to attend the Lambeth Conference. I mean, that was, you know, a rather confronting move on your part, wasn't it?
I think it was confronting because the issues that have been raised in North America, first of all, are of such gravity that unless this action was taken, the issues would not have come into sufficiently sharp focus. We needed to say, this is tremendously important. It has to be dealt with.
Well, you're talking here about the consecration of Gene Robinson, an openly gay man, as Bishop of New Hampshire some 9 years ago. But is that really a doctrinal issue? I mean, couldn't that simply be viewed as a lapse in practice by the Episcopal Church? Did it need to be such a divisive doctrinal issue?
Could have been, and I fully accept that sometimes particular events happen which may be regretted later on all sides. But, you know, it wasn't that. You've located one thing. But before that, in Canada, in the Diocese of New Westminster, 8 or 9 churches had left the synod over a matter of blessing of same-sex unions. And it was that in particular which alerted me. The issue is therefore not just a single consecration. The issue is of a movement, a mass movement within the churches of North America to step outside the boundaries of biblical faith, to step away, in fact, from what Lambeth had said only 2 or 3 years before by an overwhelming majority, and to commit themselves to a path which I think is inherently unbiblical. So the issue is not so much human sexuality, it is an issue of authority and biblical authority.
That's the Anglican Archbishop of Sydney, Peter Jensen, and this is the Religion and Ethics Report with me, Andrew West.